Fire Engineering Podcasts are sponsored by MSA. Firefighters want to be connected to each other, to dispatch, and to their commanders. MSA has created Lunar, a wireless, handheld device that includes thermal imaging, firefighter ranging, motion alarm, and cloud technology with GPS. It's part of the new connected firefighter platform from MSA. Learn more at msafire.com.
Good evening and welcome to this episode of Fire Engineering Radio, the Future Firefighter Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Baker. We have an excellent show scheduled. Joining me on the podcast is my good friend, Ben May. Ben is a board director for the Center for Public Safety Excellence and recently retired global director of corporate alliances for the Walt Disney Company. He worked with Disney to create seven-figure interactive social marketing experiences dedicated to the betterment of society, specifically fire protection and prevention, as well as international alliances, most recently as global senior leader based in Paris over the last few years. Ben is a graduate from the Montgomery, Maryland Public Service Training Academy. Ben has been a firefighter for Hillendale Fire and Rescue in Montgomery County, Maryland, and fire commissioner for Woodinville Fire and Rescue in Washington State. Ben, welcome.
Thanks, Chris. I really do appreciate it. Great to be here.
So, Ben, we've been good friends, and you've helped me over the last year as a mentor, and I follow you on LinkedIn, and I follow your posts, and I've read several of your articles. Over the last 16 years, I know you've been a contributing author to almost all the fire service publications out there. So for the listeners that are listening, that are tuning in tonight, please, I'll include the show notes, a link to some of Ben's work and Ben's articles. He's a very talented and amazing author. And so, Ben, if you could please, you know, why did you choose this profession? Can you please share with the listeners, how did you kind of get your start in the fire service?
Thanks, Chris. It's an interesting story, I guess, but not too much different than anybody that's listening in and you as well. I was born in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and my parents were divorced when I was six. I was an only child. My dad, every Saturday, used to pick me up and he'd ask me, they used to call me Benji. He'd say, "Hey, Benji, where do you want to go?" And I'd go, "I want to go to the firehouse." And he'd go, "Okay." And so he would take me. I remember the first time there were 36 stations in Oklahoma City, and he'd take me down to the main fire station on California Street. And I remember the first time I walked in. If you've ever been in New York City and you looked at the bottom of the Empire State Building, and you look straight up and you go, "Whoa." When I walked across that threshold into that firehouse, and it was a huge, when I say house, it was a main fire station, a lot of apparatus, poles, you know, everything. This is like in 1956, right? My eyes bugged out. My heart started to beat. And my mouth dropped open and I just went, whoa, you know, and the hair on the back of my neck stood up. I could hardly even stand, you know, to the back step. I was that short, and it just went all through me. And I know a lot of guys and girls have that same feeling, you know. So I was 6 years old, right? And I, after that, you know, my dad would say, "Well, what the next week?" He'd say, "Well, where do you want to go?" And I go, "Well, fire station number two." And he'd go like that through 36 weeks. And then at the end of, you know, 36 weeks, he'd go, "Well, where do you want to go now?" And I go, "Back to fire station number one." You know, that was it. That's all I wanted to do. That was it. And, you know, as a little kid, you know, I would buy ARCO manual. They're called ARCO, which was a public service manuals with questions in them, you know, about, it'd say fireman FD, as opposed to like fireman that stoked steam engines. That's how old I am. And so I would read the questions. I didn't even know what they meant, you know, things like friction loss, you know, and I'd like, "I don't know what that means, but I'm going to figure it out." And I have my jeans rolled down over my cowboy boots by my bed, and I'd have the Oklahoma City Fire Department scanners going on, you know, alarms going off, all this kind of stuff. And so now I'm 70 years old and I feel exactly the same way now that I did then. And that's the way it's been with me. And I'm sure that's the way it'll be with all of you. I don't know what it is. I can't tell you. You know, people, my mother used to say, man, I must have been pregnant when, you know, I must have been by a firehouse when I was pregnant with you. You know, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. It's like eating a chocolate cake and you never get full. I can never get enough of it. And everybody that I know in this profession feels the same way. And I don't question it. When you fall in love, you don't question it. And that's the way I feel about it.
Well, thank you, Ben. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners that are listening now feel exactly the same way. And that's why they're pursuing a career in the fire service. I think your story is very similar to the story of a lot of others that are listening right now. So, Ben, I know you've done a lot of work, your life's work in marketing. If you could just share with the listeners what the definition is of marketing and why it's so important to the fire service.
Sure. So let me kind of step back on that and just kind of give you an idea of why I decided to go do this. A long time ago, I had a mentor, and he was his name was Warren Isman. And he was a fire chief in Arlington, Virginia, and he was a foremost expert on hazmat, and he was a great mentor to me. And when I was younger, I asked him, you know, chief, you know, I've got these different skills, you know, I love the fire service, but I'm not quite sure what my next steps are. I was in my 30s, and he said, you know something, Ben, people don't know what we do. And, you know, you seem to kind of gravitate in that area where you want to tell people what, you know, what's going on, you know. And so I think maybe what you ought to do is go out there and start to tell people what we do, because if they don't know what we do, we won't be in business. And I thought about that and I said, well, do you mean like be like a PIO, you know, public information officer? And he goes, nah, I don't think that. He says, I think it needs to be bigger than that. And I said, okay, chief, thanks a lot, you know. God bless him. He died at a young age, but he was a great mentor to me. And so anyway, I went out and I started thinking about it. And I started taking courses in Montgomery County Junior College, I created something called Fire Service Marketing Management. How would marketing apply to the fire department? And people used to think I was nuts in the beginning when I talk about it. And basically what marketing is finding a need, creating a product or service, and filling that need. And the marketing is the all of the aspects that bring the product or service to market. So it might be sales, it might be advertising in particular, social media, every single thing you can think of that brings the product or service to the customer. That's what marketing is all about.
Well, thank you. And I know that you're a trustee member for the National Fire Heritage Center, and I know you have a passion for our history and our traditions that we have in the fire service, and Chief Isman is part of the Hall of Legends, Legacies, and Leaders with the National Fire Heritage Center. So Ben, what's the difference between corporate marketing and public service marketing?
Great question. So here's the difference. So, you know, as you know, like I was an executive with the Walt Disney Company, and Disney is a publicly owned enterprise, right? I mean, it has stockholders, it has a great brand, but in the end, private enterprise makes money. That's what it's all about. And you can talk about how great, you know, I can tell you, people love Disney, they love the brand, they love all those kinds of things. But in the end, if we're not making a profit, we're not going to be in business. And so what motivates someone working for a company like that, I'm not suggesting, oh, we're all in it for the profit. There's lots of, you know, there's medical supply companies. Everybody has or should have, a passion for what they're selling or what they're doing. The difference is that obviously with public service, you're not making a profit. It's a different kind of market and it's a different kind of approach. And I'll give you an example. I was a fire commissioner, right? So when I became fire commissioner, I was leading a fire department. And I knew that if I did not follow that mission as far as I could take it, somebody could die, they may not get our service, you know. I had to lead and not worry about profit. I was worrying about the mission, which was protecting the public And just as important, protecting all of those firefighters and their families. They get a hangnail, I'm going to be there. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to do whatever I can. I'm driven to follow that mission. I'm not suggesting that a guy like Bill Gates or whoever it might be wasn't passionate and not driven and all of those kinds of things. That's just great. But in the end, they're going to make a profit, right? That's fine. But not in a public service and not with a fire service. It's pure. And what drives you is a passion for the profession and what the profession means. And that means you'll go through brick walls where, you know, if you're doing it for the money, maybe you won't, maybe you will. I don't know. I don't care. But I do care about the fire service. So that's the difference. That, and it's a big difference because when you take that oath, this isn't like you go into a company and you're going to start making widgets and we'll see how far you go. And then you're going to, you know, maybe you get promoted, maybe you don't. When you take that oath, you're a leader. You're a leader the day you take the oath. That's the big difference. And you are driven by a passion and by the mission, which is to protect the public. That's a big difference between the two.
Well, thank you for sharing it. I think that's very important and paramount. And for the listeners that are listening, that's the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to achieve this desired position in the fire service and to become a public safety servant. And you take that oath and it's for your entire career. And that's the oath to be a public safety servant and to serve Mrs. Smith. And so, Ben, if you could share, I know I've attended a couple of your seminars in the past, and I encourage the listeners that are listening, if you have the opportunity to attend a webinar with Ben, I highly encourage you to register and attend. Webinar I attended recently was one that you gave that caught me and caught my attention, and I think I took about 10 pages of notes. So, Ben, if you could share with the listeners, what is the brand aspect of the fire service and why is it important?
You bet. Great question, Chris, because it is about the brand. And you might say, well, you know, what is a brand? You know, what is it? Because that's part of the marketing. So let me put it to you this way. Imagine a professional organization driven by a tradition and an active living mission of excellence, poised for service delivery 24/7. Now think of a brand so pervasive that it's in every neighborhood in this country, almost four times more ubiquitous than Starbucks stores. Consider that this organization has no market segmentation. In other words, you don't break up the market into age or psychographics, as they're called, because every customer in the nation receives the highest quality of service based on one phone call day or night. Now consider that this organization's corporate brand is so well known and popular that its physical shape is immediately recognizable and understood. This brand evokes such trust that the men and women representing it are co-opted for any number of commercial products advertised in the media, hoping to grasp just a tiny piece of its halo effect. The brand is also so pervasive that children play with toys representing it, dressing up in costumes of the men and women who engage in its work, many aspiring to become one when he or she grows up. Consider that this brand also has so much equity and confidence that Americans trust the organization second only to their families. That is the U.S. Fire Service. That's what the brand means in the minds of the entire public. And what I mean by brand is it's a story. A brand is a promise. When somebody sees that Maltese cross, they know, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. That's critically important. So a brand is a story, a brand is a promise, and a brand has equity. It has value. And our value, you know, I can tell you that, well, the Walt Disney brand is, you know, $150 million in brand equity or something like that. $150 billion, sorry, missed a number there. But I can tell you that the Maltese Cross brand is priceless, as they say. It's priceless. So that's what the brand is. And You may ask yourself, even though you haven't asked me this, you know, who owns that brand? Who owns it? Well, the public owns the brand. The public owns it, especially with social media, which you know about so well, Chris. The public owns the brand, but we control the brand message. And that's why, marketing is so important for the fire service, because it's up to us to be able to control that message. Critically important. So we have to come up with strategies to do that. And you may say, well, why do we need marketing in the first place? Why do we need it in the first place? Let me tell you why you need it in the first place. Because we won't be in business. That's why. I mean, let me give you an example. So about every fifth year, somebody writes an article in the Wall Street Journal, and usually it's on the front page. And it's usually written by some political person who is looking at the budgets, or it's written by an economic professor. And the message is, well, you know, we used to have this big fire problem, but now we don't have it so much anymore. And, you know, who knows what firefighters do? I mean, after all, they got six men women engine companies now. Why do we need all that if the fire rate's going down? And after all, we all know that EMS numbers are up. Why do we need that anyway? And we shouldn't call it fire department. We should call it something else, right? That's the problem. And you get somebody in there that starts looking at budgets and things like that, and they go, you know, I don't know why it is that we need these people in the first place, because after all, we could just go private. So it's up to us. It's our responsibility to keep the image of the firefighter in front. They need to know what we're doing, and they need to know why we're doing it. Because even though the public says, if you ask the public, they'll go, well, what do you think of your fire department? Oh, we love them, right? We love them. And they say, oh, great. So do you know what they do besides put fires out? Well, I know they go to car wrecks. They really don't. They don't know what we do. And so it's up to us to tell them what we do, because when they know what we do, they will pay for it in terms of their taxes. The problem is right now is that the average American consumer receives 5,000 commercial messages per day, according to the American Advertising Institute. 5,000 per day through all kinds of media. Now you figure take a look at your mobile device. You add that to it, and the average attention span of an American is that of a gnat. So you have to figure out, how am I going to break through this clutter to get my message across? And luckily, we have the ability to do that, because when we're out there, people notice it.
And I love that. And for the listeners that are listening, I'm a little remiss. I met Ben about a year ago through the National Fire Heritage Center, and I've like a gnat, I guess you could say, or a moth to the flame. You've captured my interest, and marketing is so important. And you've, through just our mentorship and our friendship over the last year, you've shared that with me, and I've often considered and thought to myself that, you know, the public, they don't care what patch you wear. They don't care what fire department, fire protection district. They don't care community service district, you know, career, volunteer. You know, we could argue over what the best color is for a fire engine. But ultimately, when they call 911 and the fire department shows up, The customer just wants, the consumer, the citizen, just wants the fire department to solve their problem and to mitigate their problem. And so, you know, when we look at marketing and we look at brand, we can talk about all these different things, patches, logos, stickers. But ultimately, the brand, like you shared, is so important, because they call 911, we show up, and we fix their problem. So, it's so eloquent, because I really believe that is the most trusted brand in America, because of our tradition, our heritage. And so, Ben, you shared this with me before. If you could just share for the listeners, I'm a big fan of history. You're a big fan of history. Can you just share, like, just over the last, say, 200 years, the evolution of the fire service and that brand?
I sure can. And back to what you were, just to support what you just said, as we get to this, one thing to please keep in mind when you take that oath is it is your responsibility. You don't have to be a marketing guy or girl, but it's your responsibility to make sure that people know what in the heck we're doing. You can't just say, oh, I didn't sign on for that. You have the responsibility. You got that uniform and people are looking at you all the time. And so it's up to you to make sure that people understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. And you'll get all kinds of opportunities to do that, because if you don't, you won't be in business. You won't be here. You know, it's just like I remember way back when I was a fire commissioner and somebody said, I signed up to do fire. I didn't sign up to do EMS. And I said, you know what, pal? You didn't sign up to do EMS. You won't be a firefighter, because we won't be in business. So you have to embrace the whole thing. Your responsibility is the entire public safety, whatever it might be. And let's kind of take, as Chris said, let's take a quick walk down memory lane, and we'll talk about how that started. And what I call that is the evolution of the brand. The evolution of the brand. Think about this for a minute. Think about Walt Disney, right? So go back to the 30s. Walt Disney comes out and he comes up with this mouse. And the mouse is named Mortimer, you know? And his wife says, yeah, I don't think I like that name. Maybe we ought to call him Mickey, you know? And he's like, oh, okay, that sounds good to me, right? So he comes up with this mouse. And then he comes up with a movie, Snow White. So he's got animation, he's got Snow White movie, and at the time they thought that was as amazing as Steve Jobs with Apple. It was that crazy, you know. So here's the deal. He went from the movie business to the theme park business to the cruise line business to the event business to the merchandising business to every single thing you can think of, and now we're doing online streaming with Disney Plus, right? So he migrated the brand. He grew it, right? So let's take the same idea back with a fire service. So let's go all the way back to good old Ben Franklin, 1736, Union Fire Company in Philadelphia, right? Incidentally, the first five presidents of the United States were volunteer firefighters, in case you wondered about that. Why? Because they were proud, because the brand made them proud, right? So we go back to Ben Franklin. What did Ben Franklin have? Well, he had hooks, he had ladders, he had buckets. He didn't even have hose. It was leather hose after that, but that's all he had, right? And so what? When we go back then, we kind of say, well, let's see, what did they do? Well, they put fires out. That's about it. You call, we come, put the fire out. And then, so we call that suppression. And so after that, what was the next step? Well, believe it or not, back then, firefighters did not do salvage and overhaul. They just put the fire out. And they only put the fire out where there was what's called a fire mark. So it was like a brass or a kind of a wood mark on your house. And if you didn't have that mark, you didn't have fire insurance, they wouldn't come put the fire out. So you have fire suppression and you had salvage. And the first salvage company was called the Fire Patrol, started in New York City in 1839. It actually was there until after 2000, if you can believe that or not. What did these guys do? They just did salvage and overhaul. You get a big building fire and they come and do it. They would take everything out and make the place, you know, as hospitable as it was after the fire was over. So what after that? Well, you know that everything was made out of wood, so the houses were, you know, the cities were burning. And a lot of that came from chimneys, you know, because you had your fires coming up the chimney. So they put into place, Peter Stuyvesant in New York put into place an ordinance to maintain chimneys, had chimney sweeps, make sure it was all clean. And that was actually a code that they enforced. So what does that mean? Then we moved from suppression to salvage and overhaul to enforcement, which meant what? Prevention. So let me kind of stop at prevention, and I'm going to give you a quick story. So the first time that I had to give or I should say the first time I was privileged to give a lecture at the U.S. Fire Academy, it was to 100 fire marshals in the country. And, you know, at the time I was like, well, I know about suppression. I don't know that much about, you know, fire prevention, fire marshals. What do I need to know here, right? So I read a book about it by a guy named Jim Crawford, who is an amazing guy, and he was the leader of Vision 2020. And if you knew about that, and he's an amazing fire marshal. And I called him. He's a great friend of mine to this day. And I said, hey, you know, what is it? And he says, well, you know, fire marshal, fire prevention has to do with the three E's, enforcement, education, and the fire marshal is not like, you know, I used to think, oh, it's like a marshal in Tombstone. No, no, no. The fire marshal marshals all the forces arrayed against fire. And you got to remember that at the time, fire prevention, fire marshals, they were kind of like the redheaded stepchild. They're like, no one listens. No one wants to do that. They want to go put the fire out. They don't want to be the fire marshal. And I'm like, are you crazy? If you're the fire marshal, if you're doing prevention, you're doing everything, not just suppression, which is going down. You're responsible for everything. You guys are the future, right? And they were like, whoa, this is cool, right? Which is true. So you move from prevention now, which is broad, and you keep going. Now, in prevention, you have public education, right? And there you have social marketing. Social marketing is when you change behavior. So when you do stop, drop, and roll, or whatever it might be, seatbelts is social marketing. So that's another aspect of the marketing within the fire service. And so then you go to what? What was the big change in the early 70s? EMS. EMS, suddenly, oh my God, now we've really got our hands full, right? EMS. And when you did that, what you are, what the fire service is in you know, sort of technical terms, is it's a public safety distribution network. That's what it is. And you load that network up. And so you got EMS, and then you have, that was in 1975, by the way, and then you have HAZMAT. Then you load on disaster preparedness, and then what do you put on? Community risk reduction. Community risk reduction is the complete, if you thought about it like a big pie, it's the entire pie of public safety. Because community risk reduction means that you are responsible for everything. Now, what does that mean in terms of marketing? It means that now they go to the fire department for everything. They don't just say, oh, I only go for this and I only go for that. You've expanded your market. You now control the entire market. And so there's a gentleman, a deputy chief named Joe Powers. He's the first deputy chief, Charlottesville, Virginia, of community risk reduction. And it's not prevention. Prevention's a part of it. The community risk reduction is something you guys and girls need to embrace, because what that will mean is, so it can be social services, it can be anything. The main point is they call you first. You're controlling the market. You're controlling the brand. And when you do that, it's very difficult to get rid of you that way.
I remember when you shared that in the previous webinar that I attended, and I, every time that you share that, I love it. And it's important. And I think every listener listening right now, they need to know that brand evolution. And you're entering into a profession, literally has 200 plus years of marketing, branding, research. The fire service has built that brand. And you're entering into a profession where that brand is paramount to what we do and the services that we provide. And you mentioned a couple of fellow mentors that I have. Chief Jim Crawford was recently inducted to the Hall of Legends, Legacies, and Leaders. Excellent man. And Vision 2020, an excellent organization. And the listeners that are listening out in the audience, I highly encourage you to find out about Vision 2020 by visiting their website, strategicfire.org, and get plugged into community risk reduction. It's very important. Like Ben said, it takes everything that we do and it engages you as a public safety servant with the community you serve, the citizens that we serve. Community risk reduction encompasses everything. And so my last podcast with Chief Gary Ludwig, we talked about smoke alarms, and we talked about a routine EMS call. You go in and you might check the person's smoke alarms to see if they work, if they're operational, if they have any, where they're located, you know, time change, changing your batteries. If it's a 10-year encapsulated unit, you know, is it expired? Do they need to go purchase a new one? Some fire departments even have a program where they'll install a smoke alarm free of charge into their citizens' homes. So it's very important. So the listeners, please do research as you're preparing for your interviews and you're out on the testing circuit, please do research on the department that you're applying to and their public education office, their fire prevention office, their community risk reduction office. Find out mentors like Deputy Chief Joe Powers, an amazing mentor, amazing PIO, and he's also affiliated with Vision 2020. He serves on their advisory board. So excellent information, Ben. I love it. I mean, every time we talk, the little hair on the back of my neck stands up and I get excited about this profession. And so, Ben, if the listeners that wanted to contact you, I know you do a lot of mentoring. If the listeners wanted to contact you, what's the best way for them to contact you and ask for help?
The best way to contact me is at my email at Ben Madonic, BenMadonic, no spaces, at gmail.com. And that's probably the best way to do it. One point I wanted to make before we leave, even though you didn't ask me, I'm going to go ahead and tell you. And that is to be sure to grab, if you can, download 21st Century Fire and EMS White Paper, which is put out by my organization, CPSC. It is a roadmap for the future of the fire service. And there's one piece in there that is critically important, the first pillar, if you will, and it's called re-identification. And I just wanted to get this point out to the listeners because it's really important. Some people say, well, you know, why should we call it fire department anymore? Because our call rates are going down for fires. And after all, most of what we do is EMS. Only 7% of what we do is fire. The fact is that the American public understands that the Maltese Cross and the fire department is there to protect them, no matter what it is. And just so you know, the fire rate may be going down a little bit, but there's a fire every 24 seconds in the United States. We still have a major fire problem. It isn't going to go away. Not that we don't want it to go away, but there's a structure fire every 45 seconds in this country. Seeing fires on TV, you know, on local news, that's not normal in other European countries. It is here. So we still have a fire problem. But the point I would make to you is, even though we do more EMS and we do a lot of this, you know, obviously community risk reduction, we keep the name fire. You can call it fire and life safety if you want to go far. Because if you start going in there and taking fire department out and you start saying, well, we're the safety organization, people will not have a clue as to who you are. You'll have no brand recognition.
Ben, I know you do a lot of mentoring, and you've obviously mentored me over the last year, and I can't thank you enough for the gift of your time and your help over the years. Now, you mentor chief officers, fire officers, firefighters. So if you could share with the listeners, I know a lot of them are newer firefighters or they're trying to get into the fire service. Why is it important to have a mentor? And if you could just share how you're mentoring others currently right now.
Sure. So I mentor, you know, the whole gamut from chief officers, especially, you know, I've got to tell you, I've mentored a couple of women chiefs and I really do enjoy it. They are fearless, the ones I know anyway. They are able to handle things in many ways, you know, nothing against the guys. I am a guy, right? But they seem to be able to get a handle on their emotions a lot better sometimes. You know, that's a generalization. I know. But I'm just saying, there's some of the finest chiefs in this country are women fire chiefs and the whole gamut from, you know, the whole gamut that represent the way our population is changing. So it depends. You know, you're going to mentor a fire chief in a lot different, in a much different way than you're going to mentor somebody growing up into the profession. So what I try to do is kind of just meet my mentee where he or she is. And, you know, where do you want to go? Where do you want to go with this career? You know, and you can go as far as you can. The difference, though, that I go with is, and maybe this is kind of challenging to a certain degree, this is my opinion, you know, in this profession, you're a leader from the day you take the oath. And if you don't believe that's truth, try look at the volunteers for a minute. You know, I mean, 80% of the department, I think more than that, maybe it's 85% are volunteer. If you're first on the scene, and you're driving a rig, you're the incident commander, like it or not, you know? And so you're a leader. And it's as I said before, it's different in other professions and, you know, in commercial enterprise and things like that. If you think of yourself as a leader from the day you come in, you're going to grow and you're going to do certain things that make you increase your confidence and make you a better fire officer, if that's where you end up going. But you're going to go up. It's not like in other kinds of professions. You never stop learning. You always keep going. You can always get better. You know, how do I do this better? My organization, CPSC, that's what we look at. It's improvement, process improvement. How do we come better? How do we go to the top? How do we do the best of the best? And that means that you're a model for the community. And when people see you, when you do one thing that besmirches the fire service, if you do something that is wrong, something that is not right, and we kind of all know where I'm going with some of this stuff, you know, harassment, I don't know what it might be, who knows? You're representing the entire profession, not just your department. It's not like you go out and you're going to get a Chevrolet or a Ford. You're representing the whole fire service. And you do one thing that besmirches the fire, that besmirches your department, it reflects on the whole fire service. So you don't want to do that. You want to go in the other direction. The other direction. That's what you signed on to do. The other direction. And I'll end with a quick story. I worked with Disney and I put together a deal with the Israelis. And I went over to Israel. And I was fortunate enough to have an interview with a Nobel Peace Prize winner in organic chemistry. It's a woman. And she was in her 80s. And I said, what motivated, how could you get a Nobel Peace Prize? I mean, this is a big deal. You know, how did you get a Nobel Peace Prize? What motivated you to do that? You know, her name was Annette. And she said, we were talking Hebrew, you know, and she said to me, Ein Bara, which means no choice. No choice. And she said, I came over here in 1948. We didn't know if we were going to exist as a country, as a nation. We had no choice but to be excellent. We had to do the best we could or we would be annihilated. And that's the way I look at the fire service. You have no choice but to be excellent. No choice but to follow the mission to protect the citizens 24/7, and you do what you need to do that. And that means you take care of the people you're with. You help them. You give them a hand up. You know, sometimes the public is so starving because they're so disenfranchised. They're so kind of out there, alienated. Sometimes they just need a hug, you know? Sometimes you go on a good intent call and somebody is just having a bad, bad day. And they're at their wits' ends, and they just need somebody to show up, and they know they're going to be taken care of, and that's who you are. That's what you do.
And I love it. Care and compassion, and within the COVID times of, you know, 2020, you know, we're in December, and we're almost to the end of 2020, and you think about all the fire department, the fire service, all our first responders, all our public safety servants this last year serving our communities, we have no choice. I mean, people call 911. There's no 912, and Big Red shows up, and, you know, four, sometimes three, maybe one, maybe two, the public, they don't care. The highly trained public safety servants show up to mitigate their emergency. And sometimes it's just to the reassurance, you know, the lift assist. It's to pick people up, put them back into bed, or, you know, and they just need that kind and caring, compassionate public safety servant to come and help them during their time of need. And it's the brand. And we do it. We don't get to choose what calls we respond to. You know, we go to everyone and we give the same level of service, because that's what the public expects. And Ben, I love it. And so, Ben, as we wrap up the show, I want to give a shout out to Fire Engineering and to Chief Bobby Halton. And, you know, we were sharing a discussion about the team at Fire Engineering and this opportunity to have this podcast. January will mark 3 years that I've had this opportunity. This marks my 25th episode, and And I'm just so excited and honored and humbled to be able to welcome guests like yourself onto the show. And, you know, I've been asked, you know, why is marketing important? You know, as a future firefighter, why is marketing important? And I hope that the listeners that listen to this episode now know why marketing is so important to the fire service. So before I let you leave, it's taken us quite a while. It's almost about a year to schedule this podcast. And if you could just share one last bit of mentorship advice for the future firefighters that are out there that are pursuing a career position in the fire service.
Sure. The first is, you don't know how good you can be, and you're going to find out, but you don't know how good you can be. And, you know, when I started out, I was scared of heights. I didn't know math. I didn't know how to work a pump. You know, some of the people living with me would tell me, well, I better not drive the rig or I'd get lost, you know. And I was able to, and I don't mean that I'm such a hot shot, but I'm just saying, if you're passionate enough about it, you'll go through brick walls to get there. You'll figure it out. I figured out how to do those pumps. I figured out how to go up a ladder, up and down, work, you know, do all that kind of stuff. And you will too, because the mission will drive you to do it. You will be driven to excellence, and that's what you need to do. You'll find your place, and that's just critically important. The other thing is to know that what you represent is probably one of the most important things in our society. And you need to remember who you are and what you represent. And thirdly, everybody's watching you. You have the uniform on. They're watching you. Remember it. Remember who you are and what you represent, and you'll do well.
Well, Ben, thank you. Again, the listeners out in the audience, please contact Ben. You can professionally network with him on LinkedIn. Ben May, I'll include a link in the show notes to this episode. I reached out to Ben over a year ago, and Ben gave me the beautiful gift of his time and has helped me over this last year tremendously. So please reach out. Please seek a mentor, and don't give up. This is the best job in the world, and it's the most trusted brand in America. And Ben, thank you for everything that you've done, not only for me, but for the fire service.
Chris, thank you too. You have done a lot for me. And just one point, you talk about not give up. You're the one that should take a bow on not giving up with your background and expertise and where you've ended up now. So do not give up. You're right. Thanks again.